Good morrow, and welcome back to the realm. I am epic fantasy author JV Hilliard, your friendly neighborhood scribe. And for those of you that are taking your first adventures through the realm tonight, this is my vast and sweeping domain where I feature a variety of creatives on a weekly basis. And each of those creatives specialize in a different art form. And tonight we have a fellow scribe, another author on the realm with me tonight, Katie Mitsui. And as always, if you like what you hear, you can find me and my epic dark fantasy books at jvhilliard.com. Or follow me at JV Hilliard Books on Twitter/X, Instagram, TikTok, and at YouTube. Or look for me as JV Hilliard on Facebook and Discord. As we reach our witching hour, I'd love to thank our longtime sponsor, Altered Reality Magazine. So if you haven't checked it out, check it out at alteredrealitymag.com. The magazine specializes in speculative fiction and speculative poetry. So if you, like me, are a fan of sci-fi, which we're going to hear a little bit about tonight, fantasy, which we'll hear a little bit about tonight, horror or the dystopian or gothic or cryptids and monsters and stuff like that, that's the place to go, alteredrealitymag.com. So go ahead and check that out when you have a chance. And tonight we're going to be chronicling the adventures of Katie Mitsui. So Katie, welcome to the realm. And are you ready to kind of dive into your authorship a little bit here?
I am. Thanks for having me.
It is our pleasure. So tell everybody a little bit about yourself and what got you into becoming a writer.
Oh, I'm sure. So this is a first book for me. I'm a first time author, a long time reader. My mom's a librarian, so I feel like I've read a lot of things over the years, a lot of classic sci-fi and fantasy. And, you know, I have a regular day job and all those things. So this is something that I jokingly call like a fun midlife crisis for me, because I couldn't get the idea out of my head, really just kind of like circled around it and finally, bit the bullet and went forward with it. And I'm really happy with the way it turned out. So,
well, first of all, I'm jealous of you having a mother that was a librarian. That is just totally badass. And I, nothing against my mother. She worked at a telephone company, which shall not be named. But, ultimately, I think that, that's super cool. But let's dive into it a little bit, because you hit something that I think really hits a chord with our listenership. Mm-hmm. Many of the folks that listen are not just avid readers, but they're also authors or aspiring authors. And since this is your debut novel and you've chosen the path of self-publication, mm-hmm. Talk about that experience a little bit. What was, did you think you made the right choice? Did you try to go the traditional ways, getting an agent, getting a publisher? How was the experience for you, when you wrote, you arrived at that decision, and how's it been since?
Yeah, so I definitely did not really pursue the traditional route. I started to research it, and it works for some people, but a lot of the feedback I was seeing was that it just takes a very long time, to know whether or not it's going to work. And partly because I was impatient, I had sat on this story for a long time myself, and I was just really eager to, get it out in the world. But also, there's some really good publishing partners, not vanity presses, but people that will help you with the things like formatting and making sure that you get things up properly, right, on social and on Amazon and things like that. So I feel like I researched enough companies. I found one that was a good deal. I was really pleased with the way that I worked with them. And what struck me the most was that they gave me full rights to see everything at every step. So again, some of the feedback I had read from people's, various advice blogs about self-publishing was certain companies, you send it off to them and then whatever you get, you get. I mean, you don't really see it again until it's done. Whereas the company that I worked with, Book Baby, they let me see every proof, every version, every piece of the art. I art directed all the cover and everything. So they were really very responsive. And as a result, it went very quickly. And I feel like despite the fact that it took me a long time to actually get the project going, once I made the decision to do it, it went so quickly and smoothly. So I'm really pleased with the self-publishing route and how it turned out.
That's great. That's good to hear, because it's always a mixed bag. You never know until you ask somebody. And I think that many folks that are listening are going down that same path. So I think that's a great piece of advice, and also a little rah-rah speech for them too, that it works out if you put your mind to it.
But yeah.
Let's get into your books a little bit, or your book a little bit, because I have to tell you, I'm a big fan of time travel. What really got me into sci-fi fantasy when I was younger is I read Simon Hawke's Time Wars. Mm-hmm. And it was about, several hundred years in the future, and a guy, goes crazy, it takes this time warping technology, goes back in time and starts to screw up the time space continuum. Mm-hmm. But you see a lot of that in popular sci-fi and even some popular fantasy. So you look at Doctor Who, you look at Star Trek, and they've all had some timeline stuff to it. And, you know, Bree and I are sort of co-authoring a novel right now called The Element of Time, which is time travel within fantasy, mm-hmm. which I think is cool too. How did you arrive in, well, first of all, tell everybody about your books and what you're doing, but how did you arrive with the theme of time travel and what really kind of inspired you to write about that? Because that's not always the easiest thing to do.
Sure. So I will say this actually came from just a very random idea. It's just something that struck me one day. It occurred to me that in most time travel stories, you know, the focus is on one person or one group, but usually it's centered about when they end up and what happens once they're there, but they're all going together. So the premise of my story is that there's a person who invents a time machine and he wants to go 100 years into the future. But what he doesn't realize is when he does it, he accidentally pulls everyone in a 25-mile radius around him forward with him, and they all start to reappear at random times across that 100-year span. So, you know, one person might be back in a week and one person might not show up for 50 years. So it really messes with everybody's personal timeline and their personal relationships. The way it struck me was the idea of it's not just you experiencing it. It's everybody around you, your neighbors, your friends, your family. And depending on when you come back and who else is back at that time, you're going to have a completely different experience than everybody else. So it just sort of struck me as like, what a weird way to sort of think about the sort of well-traveled trope. And, you know, really honestly, for years, I was like, I haven't finished writing it yet, but I haven't seen anybody else approach it this way. You know, the idea is still there. I feel like it's still fresh. And that's like what kept me going to finally finish it up.
Hey, that's interesting because I mentioned Time Wars earlier, and the concept there is you get a crazy guy who's a scientist that goes back in time to screw everything up because he doesn't like the direction they're going in the future. Mm-hmm. And so he's screwing up the timeline for millions of people throughout the time-space continuum backward. Mm-hmm. You know, this is going forward, and I think that's really cool. And the fact that it has sort of geographic sort of significance to it, and the fact that they're not all appearing together is also pretty unique too. So is the plan for this to be a series then, or do we see when we get to the, because of the way you've written this, right, you've got basically 100 years worth of a story,
right,
that you could drop in there. Like, is this going to be a series? Are we going to have one-offs? Are we going to have spin-offs? I mean, what's the plan for the next step here? And do you have a work in progress?
I do. So I purposely left it as a cliffhanger, and I always had the idea that I wanted to be written in a way that if I don't decide to write a sequel or, you know, a series, that it still makes sense and it's not a complete cliffhanger. So no spoilers, but I left it in a way that, like, you could definitely just think about what you think happens next, and it would be a great sort of thing for people to think through. But I also left it open that if I did want to return to the idea, you know, it's definitely easy to jump back into it. I do have a work in progress. I'm not sure yet, you know, if I will, you know, move forward with it. I hope that I can. But I think that the second time frame, like you said, the first book covers 100 years. You can't keep doing that each time because that completely changes the way it's done. So the second one is more of a focus on some of the people that were introduced in the first one and sort of the aftermath of the aftermath.
And would you consider them like the main characters then, or are they going to be, because you have this way of, you know, you're a real mix of viewpoints here.
Right? Sure.
And, you know, how do you as an author keep track of that? And are the follow-ups, are they going to be kind of the main characters? Should your readers expect that? Or, how do you plan on writing that?
So, okay, in the first book, you know, like you said, there's a lot of different viewpoints because the idea is so complex. I wanted to make sure that I was seeing it from a lot of people's stories and not just focusing on one person. But again, it's a 100-year span. So you're not really going to be able to have one main character or lots of main characters who make it through the whole thing, you know? So the second work in progress that I've got going is less of a time frame, but more of a focus on a few of the people introduced, and they would be considered more like main characters. So again, it's a little early on. I'm maybe 85% of the way through, and, you know, it's looking good so far, but, you know, it's only been 6 months since the first one came out, so still leaving it open. But I've had a lot of people also say to me, like, wow, this could be almost be like a weekly television series or something, a movie, because it's got that sort of quantum leap feel of, like, each time you could focus on a different person's story. And you can legitimately do that because, again, for each person, it's very, very different.
You know, that is a really good comparison. Quantum Leap, that is a really, really good comparison from what I've seen so far. But just because, well, you're right. But, you know, also, I think that you're right, because they're, every time it's done through a different character's point of view. And I don't mind that. I think in sci-fi and fantasy, you find a lot of our types of novels offering multi-point of view main characters, mm-hmm. as opposed to that single point of view that you might find in other forms of contemporary fiction. There's nothing wrong with it. It's just, I think that because our novels have a tendency to be complex, and they also have a tendency to be in series, mm-hmm. it's a good thing to see through someone else's eyes when it really comes down to it. But so tell me this, I mean, everybody has a different idea about time travel, you know, whether you're a scientist, whether you're a fiction writer like you and I are, you know, or just someone that's a theorist that's out there. You mentioned before that you've got folks in here that are talking about the technicality of it. You have other people that are just dragged into it. Like, how did you decide to handle the time? Talking to your sci-fi fans, right? Your readership is out there. How do you tell people that the time travel happened, or is it something that you just you kind of set it up technically and then let them figure, you know, fill in the voids?
So it's interesting because as I started to write, basically I flip between different people's viewpoints, but I also have a good amount of chapters that are the viewpoint of like a news bulletin or, you know, an official government update. So that way it's like you can get some of the more technical stuff in a way that you don't have to force a person to try to say it. Like, not everybody can be an engineer.
It's a good one.
Right.
It's like, I totally get you. Yeah.
But as a result, it was good to do it that way, in my opinion, because it's like, look, when it first happens, you know, the guy who invented the machine and went into the future, he's gone for the next 100 years. So he has no idea any of this is happening. We're seeing it from, like, you know, sequentially of what's happening right now and then 5 years from now, et cetera. So at the beginning, people are just confused. They don't know it's a time machine. They're just like, what the heck happened in Toledo? Like, everybody disappeared all of a sudden. So you have that initial sort of nobody knows what happens. There's weird theories. There's conspiracy theories. Some people think it's a hoax. You know, things that people would naturally start to think if something bizarre like that happened, right? Then as time goes on, you get people like scientists, you know, outpouring from the scientific community with all sorts of theories. And they land on the idea, they understand that it's time travel, but they don't really understand how it happened or why it worked or what the parameters are. So as people start to come back, and again, for each of them, they have no idea. To them, it was a blink of an eye. And hey, by the way, it's been 20 years. For you. So some of those things, it's like I didn't want to focus just on the first person perspectives because everyone's reaction is immediately going to be confusion. So that's like why I try to kind of show it from different viewpoints. You get the sense of like how it impacts them, but you're also not just relying on individual people's reaction to kind of tell the story.
You know, I think that's really clever, right? Like, let's face it. I mean, that's first of all, it's I don't want to call it unique, but it's pretty close to being unique what you've done here in that respect. I'm struggling off the top of my head to find something that's analogous to it. But by the same, I almost kind of like Lost, the TV show, or something like that, where you've got everybody coming in. But like in here, you can, how do you handle aging then? Like, so let's say you have a family of four sucked into the future, and the youngest is dropped off first and the oldest is dropped off 80 years later, where that child could have already lived their entire life before they see their parent again, who's still the same age when they die.
Exactly.
Like, how have you handled that craziness? Because I don't know how else to describe it. That's like, it's almost like a psychedelic drug trip, right? The last 80 years is crazy.
Right. Because it's so much more complex than just, like waking up for a coma, because if that happened, everybody else moved at the same pace. You're the only one who didn't. Right. In this case, it's almost like everybody's having that type of experience, but completely like wacky. So I did try to tell that viewpoint from multiple people's views. So you get one group where it is like a family. And, you know, for one of them, you know, maybe they come back, and to them, the weird thing is that they've got one child who's back who's still a toddler, and exactly how they remember them. And the other one's 80 years old, like you said. So that's a very different dynamic. It's a different perspective from each of those children who will, you know, have grown up with or without one or both parents. You're going to have some where they come back and their child is the same age as them. And it's like, well, how do they handle it? So I try to showcase how some people do handle it differently. One, they say, I guess we're just going to have to be like friends because I can't parent you. We're basically the same age and we're going to make our peace with that and make the best of it. Other people really can't. And you hear people who like struggled with it. You know, it took a big toll on their mental health, and they weren't able to really handle the reality of how that worked. For others, it's like, if, you know, I try to explore the idea of parents and children, couples, what do you do if you're back and your spouse isn't? You know, do you wait 50 years and just miss them for 50 years, you know, and that's the end of it? Or do you try to move on with your life? So I did try to show enough circumstances where people might even have had a similar situation, but the way that they react to it is very different.
Yeah, it's gotta be crazy. I mean, I even like the idea, the fact that you don't have a main character.
Yeah.
What are the pros and cons of that? I mean, it sounds to me like you've got a bunch of pros and a bunch of cons. Did you find any limitations in that, or how did that work out for you as you were writing it?
Yeah, so I would say overall I saw it as an opportunity, because I didn't have to dwell too long on one person's experience. And, you know, the reality is again, depending on when they came back, it could be very different. One of the characters that you could consider to be a main character, he's one of the first people back, and he's also a child when it happens. So you get kind of an initial reaction to him just sort of being alone in an empty city. And what would a 10-year-old do if he suddenly was without any kind of parent? And there's that adventure feeling of like, I just got to survive on my own, and they'll come and get me kind of situation. He's the person we follow the longest because we do get to see him grow up and get involved with the, you know, search and rescue attempts and all of those things. So we see his story.
That's Trevor.
Yeah, that's Trevor. Yep. So
yeah.
I feel like a lot of people have said to me that they really connected with him because they liked being able to follow him, but not for every chapter. They liked that he could, you know, it's been another 10 years and let's see what he's doing now and how he's progressed and how people that he knew, you know, that might've come back, how he's handling, like, you know, the different stages of this. He's really seeing it from start to finish, right? So you could argue that he's the main character, but I still didn't, you know, he doesn't dominate the story. You know, there's enough other people.
Let's delve into the other side of this, right? I don't want to say the villain, but like the creator of the time situation that they're in is Jonathan.
Yep.
How does he, as someone who has to write him as a character, how does he deal with what he did? You know, like, that's a real tough, I mean, I might go crazy. You know, someone might consider suicide. Other people might want to say, I gotta reverse this and take it back. I screwed it up. Or is he just that scientist that's scratching his head and saying, well, let's see how it happens. You know, like, how did you deal with writing him?
So this is interesting because, again, I don't want to give you a spoiler on this, but the thing
fair.
But I'll say, like, you know, we start off with him. And so we know that he didn't do that intentionally. He didn't know that was going to happen with everybody.
Right.
So we kind of get the premise of why he wants to move forward in time and, you know, kind of his impulse of like why to do it. But he's pretty much gone for the whole book because we're covering that 100 years that he hasn't returned. Everybody else is coming back at random times. You know, kind of like, you know, he pulled them all forward, but they're just dropping, you know, like grains of sand, like falling where they may. For him, it's going to be the full 100 years. So you're not getting, he's the only one who doesn't know what happened. Basically, the whole world at some point knows that time travel happened and that it's, you know, been caused by a person and a machine. He's literally going to be the last person to find that out.
Craziness. Well, I got to ask, because you mentioned it earlier, it didn't slip by me, but you said Toledo, Ohio.
Yeah.
Why would you choose Toledo, Ohio as the place for this to happen? I mean, are you from there, or is there a special reason, or is there a historical thing I'm missing, or
no.
How does that play into it?
So I'm from the Chicagoland area. Like, I'm not from Toledo. So I will say that when I first started my original draft, like when I first thought of this idea a long time ago, I started with too big a place, like too big a city. Too many people were impacted. And I wrote myself into a corner very fast because I couldn't figure out how would they handle it. It's too much. So when I came back to the idea, you know, the second time around, I was like, I need something a little bit more manageable. It can't be a massive city with millions of people. It needs to be something that's, you know, a little smaller, hundreds of thousands of people, you know, not millions. It needs to still be somewhere that could sort of be contained, because that's essentially what happens, is Toledo kind of has the borders closed for 100 years while they deal with these people coming back in time, you know, randomly all over the place. So it's got to be somewhere in the Midwest. Like, I knew I wanted to keep it near the Great Lakes because I have, you know, a city built on the lake, you know, to help them facilitate, you know, what they do for the next 100 years. So I wanted it to be off the Great Lakes. It's got to be in the Midwest. So honestly, what I did is I just kind of Googled basic population information and city demographics. And then I started pulling up maps and really just looking at maybe a dozen cities that made the cut. And I really kind of fell in love with Toledo because it stuck out to me the way the river kind of cuts right through the center of the city. It just, I was like, oh, I can use that. Like, how would they use that as an advantage if you had to do a search and rescue mission that, you know, took a lot of time and, you know, all these different considerations. So I really worked it into the story. But personally, I have no specific connection to Toledo. So.
Okay. Well, I figured I had to ask, and I thought maybe there was some tactical reason why. Or all right, that's fine. Well, look, you start every chapter with a little bit of a countdown, and you know, I noticed you never really tell anybody the year, though. Is that on purpose, or
it is?
Is there a reason behind it, and what's the great reveal? You know, what am I missing?
So I do never talk about the year. It's a personal pet peeve of mine when they set a sci-fi book or movie and it's always like it's happening like this year, and then I feel like you date yourself, because then when that date passes and it didn't happen, I mean, you kind of kicked a hole in your own story. And honestly, I felt like if there's
that's clever too. I like that. Yeah, I didn't even think about that.
Yeah, it's like leave it open, you know. It's like I'm saying it's sometime around now, but it also means you don't have to call out any specific real people or, you know, even like references, like TV shows, if you don't want to. You know, you always can fall back on the idea that this could be 10 years in the future. So, you know, it's close enough to now that you can take it as written that it is.
I get that. That's good. That's really, really smart. I like that. So we're coming to the end of our time here, and I want to play a little bit of a lightning round with you. But before I do that, I have one final question on this is, this sounds like it's really, really, really technical. Are you a scientist by trade? Or like, how did you research this stuff and start? Because when, you know, like I was teasing you off the recording here about how Bree and I were writing this time book, but it's fantasy. So I don't have to be a scientist. Sure. Magic. This is a little different, like, because you're going to get challenged by people. I'm sure you already have been challenged by people that are going to, you know, push their glasses up and adjust their pencil holder or in their pocket and whatever, like, and they're going to come after you on it. How did you research it? How are you, or is it just something you kind of want to leave wide open? How did you come to this, and is this something you do professionally?
So I'm not a scientist, but I work for an empty science company. So I'm in marketing, but part of our job is to know like all the different technologies that are changing in the world and how the industries are reacting to them, because it changes like the field of regulatory compliance. So as a result, it's part of our daily work lives to know about sort of the up and coming things that are happening out in the world technology wise. So that makes it a lot easier to say, oh, well, I know this, and this is happening right now, and industries are struggling to think about what they're going to do for the next 10 years to make sure that they stay compliant with, you know, safety regulations and things. Therefore, it's so much easier to think, well, in 50 years, they'll probably be doing this, or in 100 years, they'll probably be doing this. So I didn't sit down and do like hard research, but a lot of it is based off of real science and real things that are, you know, public information out in the world. But to us, it's sort of more of like our daily lives. So definitely the people that I know that are coworkers that have read it, they got very excited to be like, ooh, I see our work influence in there. It's like, yes, yes.
That's cool. That's real cool. That's a little Easter egg for all the buddies too, right? Yeah, you're taking care of some people. Yeah, I do that with my novels too. So, yeah. Well, look, are you ready to play our lightning round?
Okay, I'm ready.
All right. So I'm going to start you off with a softball. It's really easy. Outside of your own time travel novel, what is your favorite time travel novel, series, TV show, whatever? Time travel story.
I do have to say, I do love Quantum Leap when it comes to like shows. I think honestly, like the classics, like The Time Machine, like H.G. Wells is always in any format, a real thing that I always enjoy, no matter how good or bad it's portrayed, I always still enjoy it.
Yeah, that's fair. And you can't ever go wrong with the classic that kind of started it all, right? You know, like people ask, it's like Tolkien. Of course it's Tolkien, right?
Of course,
so,
yep.
All right. This next question is a little bit more serious, because I want you to talk to our authors and aspiring authors out there that are listening to us tonight. Mm-hmm. As a self-published author, what is the best money you've ever spent and why? And then as a follow-up, what is the worst money you've ever spent and why? Give them some of your own seeds of wisdom here, pearls of wisdom.
Sure. In regards to the book, I would say, honestly, I really did my own editing and things, because again, I'm a marketer, so I do that for a living. So I did not spend money on that. Instead, I put a little bit of money towards people doing the tactical part of like the ebook formatting and things for me, because I just didn't want to mess it up And I heard too many horror stories about people where their content was good and they were so happy with the content. And then, you know, the printed version or the ebook version arrived and had something funny about it that would throw people off. And I thought, what a shame. I don't want that to be what I want. So I did spend a little money on that, and I felt like it was worthwhile and smart. I will say, like, I did try a few ads, and I don't think all of them made sense. I definitely, if I could take it back, there's a few that I probably wouldn't have bothered. I got a lot more reaction just from doing my own simple, like, reels on you know, Instagram and Facebook than I did from a few of the static Facebook ads that didn't really work for me. So I would say just, like, be careful. And I'm sure it depends, too, on who your audience is, if you're writing fiction versus nonfiction, particular topics, et cetera.
Yeah, that's fair. All right, so here's one that's might be the obvious question, but as someone who enjoys time travel, if you can choose a time to go back to, which time would you go back to and why?
Oh, you know, that's a harder question than you think. I have to be honest with you. I would probably not go backwards. I would definitely, I think, move forwards. I would be more curious to see what would happen next. And I feel like anything you go back to, there's always pros and cons, and you're probably missing a lot of the cons because history is subjective and you probably have heard, you know, sort of a sterilized version of the good stuff. So I would almost certainly go forward.
Well, you stole my next question. Thank you very much. But the problem with going forward, no, I'm just kidding.
Yep.
The problem with going forward is you don't know what time you're going to. Is it 100 years, 200 years, 500 years? Which one do you have to choose? And are you going to like it when you get there, right? So that's always a little bit of a risky one.
Yeah.
So last couple here before I let you go. And I like to ask this because I think they're fun and I think they also offer some insight. And you've already mentioned a couple here, but if you could invite one other author, dead or alive, to lunch, who would they be and why?
I'd probably pick Heinlein. Stranger in a Strange Land is one of my favorite books, and I feel like he's got a great turn of phrase. I appreciate that in so many ways, but partly because I feel like every time I read his stuff, like, I get something new out of it, no matter how many times I'm rereading. So I think that would be an interesting conversation for good or bad. I think it would be interesting.
that's fair. And you, look, he's a very popular author and, you know, like, his stuff is still well read. You can walk into any bookstore and find something. So that's, you know, that's not a bad play overall. So I'll give you props for that one. You're the first one to come on the show in the last couple of years that mentioned him. So that's a good one. A good one. That wasn't stale. Last question for you. So there's a library that's on fire and you rush in to help, but you can only save one book and that book can't be yours. Which book do you save and why?
Oh man.
well, I know.
I mean, again, child of a librarian here, so you're asking me to
I know.
Make hard choices. I will say, like, I mean, obviously nowadays, like, everything is digitized. So, like, the content will never be lost. That's the beauty of the time period we live in. You don't have to rely on the printed.
That's not the spirit of the question. You're trying to cheat.
I know. gosh, that is such a hard one. Wow. I'm not even sure I can answer that. I'm looking at my own bookshelf right now as we're talking. And I'm like, wow, there's a lot of favorites here, but...
Yeah.
They're not the most important. They're just my personal favorites, you know? Yeah. I think everybody probably says the Gutenberg Bible because it's got the most historical significance, but I mean, that's not necessarily the best.
Well, I'll tell you what, I've not had anybody say that before. So that's a really good answer.
From a historical perspective.
Based on, see, though, you took a tack where people were talking about their favorite authors or their favorite books.
Yeah.
You took one saying historical significance. You acted like a librarian there. You were like, I've got to save this treasured relic from the past.
Right,
so,
right.
Well, look, thank you very much for coming on The Realm. But before I let you go, tell everybody where they can find you, where they can buy your books, and where they can follow you on social media.
Sure. Definitely my books are available on Amazon, on barnesandnoble.com. You can find it on the Book Baby website because they also have their own, you know, print and ebook versions that they can sell. On social, you can find my author page on Facebook, or you can find me at www.katiemitsui.com. And I have a few links on there as well, to various places. So that's the easiest way to find me. And yeah, again, I'll put the link to this on there too. So for anybody who's listening, it'll all be kind of cross-pollinated.
Well, Katie, thank you very much for coming on. We really, really appreciate it. And please promise to come back. Let us know when book two comes out, and we'll do this again and help you get some promotion there. And for all of you listening, again, thank you for lending us your ear this evening. And until next time, I'm JV Hilliard, and may your gods go with you. Katie, very much. Big thanks, and welcome back anytime.
Thank you so much.